Okay, we're beginning here with the Mishnah on the bottom of Kuftet Zayin Amud Bet. The Mishnah begins, Chomer b'chelev mibedam. Fats that are asurim have certain chumrot that is not applicable by dam. Chomer dam mibechelev. And vice versa, dam has certain chumrot that don't apply to those asur fats. Chomer b'chelev, what is the chumrah that is associated with these fats that are asurim? Shachelev mo'alim bo, that chelev is subject to misappropriations of hekdesh, sacrilege. And also is subject to these restrictions that apply to issues of kodoshim, including improper makshava, leaving it over past the time that it is supposed to be eaten. And Rashi says here, tamei is someone who eats it bitumat haguf. Someone eats it when they are tamei, that is a chiyub karet. The truth is that you could have explained it when the item itself was tamei tumat basar. Although there are those that point out that the reason Rashi opts for tumat haguf and not tumat basar is because otherwise you have a problem of isur mosif that is not as chamur. Chelev itself is chayav bikaret. In order to have another isur chal on top of that, you need something that is of an equal restriction or problem. Now the consumption of kodoshim when you have tumat haguf is subject to karet as well. So there you could speak about a isur chal al isur. On the other hand, if you're speaking about tumat basar, which the Marsha calls is a lava b'michlal aseh, but the truth is that it's not just a lava b'michlal aseh, it's actually an explicit lav that one cannot eat something that is tumat basar. But nevertheless, it's not on the level of the lav, the issue of chelev, which is a few karet. This is only a plain lav, even though the Gemara Psachim seems to indicate, and the Balei Tosafot there claim, that there is a riboy to have tumah be devolve upon chelev there. But maybe that's just because there's a specific ribui there in the Gemara Psachim for the Korban HaPesach where you eat the chalavim that are tmeim, that you're chayav for both tumah and chelev. But maybe in a general sense, the tumat basar would not devolve upon the chelev itself. Masha'en kein bedam, which is not true when it comes to dam, that doesn't have a din of me'ilah, pigul, notar, v'tameh, and we'll see in the Gemara as to why that is. The chomer dam, and the dam has a din, which is more chamur than that of chelev, shadam noeg babeima v'chayavo. The dam is relevant in all of these animals, bent meim, bent orim, whether they are kosher or non-kosher animals. The chelev in a noeg, ele beheima torah vilvat. Chelev is only a restriction within kosher animals that are behemot, that are ro'ui to go on the mizbeach. Therefore, it has a limited scope in terms of the isur of chelev versus that of dam, which is applicable across the board. Mary asks, Minane Mile, how do we know that this is the case? As Rashi says over here, the chelev yesh bo mi'ilah. The Gemara wants to know, how do we know that chelev is subject to mi'ilah, the dinim of sacrilege, which means that if you violate and misappropriate the hekdesh, you're going to have to bring a korban asham mi'ilot, as well as the fact that you have to pay back 1 1/5 of the value that you misappropriated from hekdesh. How do we know that that has application by the chelev? Amar Rav Yonai, the Amar Krah, the pasuk says, by the chatat of the Kohen Gadol, the Kohen HaMashiach, which is one of the chataot that is enumerated in Parshat Vayikra. There we have the Paralam Dover Shel Tzibor, the Par Kohen Mashiach, the chatat HaNasi, and then the chatat HaYachid. When it speaks about the Par Kohen Mashiach, in describing the fats that go on the Mizbeach over there, in Pasuk Yud it says, after already describing which fats go on the Mizbeach, says v'kol chelav par chatat yarim mimenu v'et chelav mechaseh al hakarev v'et kol chelav asher al hakarev v'et shtei hakliyot v'et chelav asher lehen asher al hakzalim v'et yoteret al hakaved v'hakliyot yisirenu. Tells you all the fats that need to go on the mizbeach, and then suddenly there's this pasuk that says kasher yuram mishor zevach hashlamim. The same way you took off the fats from the shlamim, you're going to take it off from this par kohen mashiach v'yiktiram hakohen al mizbeach haula, and then you put them onto the mizbeach achitzon. Well, that pasuk Yud, after it already enumerated all the fats, why does it have to tell you just like the fats of the Zevach Shlamim? That seems to be completely extraneous and unnecessary. And that's what the Gemara says here. V'chi mad lamadu mishor Zevach Shlamim. What do we learn out from the Shor Zevach Shlamim that's not already written explicitly by Par Kohen Mashiach? Me'ata, hare zeh bad lamed. Now we see that this was coming to teach us something, meaning that the Shlamim was coming to teach us what of the Par Kohen Mashiach goes on the Mizbeach. In the end, it ends up learning from the Par Kohen Mashiach. Mekish Shor Zevach HaShlamim, the Par Kohen Mashiach. There's a hekesh now between the Shor Zevach HaShlamim, the regular Korban Shlamim, and the Parkoin Mashiach. Ma Parkoin Mashiach yesh bo mi'ila, just like the Parkoin Mashiach has a din of mi'ila, offshore Zevach HaShlamim yesh bo mi'ila, so too the Shlamim also has a din in mi'ila. Now, there's a big difference between the Parkoin Mashiach and the Shlamim. Parkoin Mashiach is a Kodshei Kodoshim. It is of the higher level of Kodesh. That means from the time that you sanctify it, you make it Hekdesh, there's a problem of mi'ila, of sacrilege, misappropriation, because the item has inherent Kedushah to it now, because it's Kedushat Mizbeach, and therefore, anything you do with it or misappropriate with is going to be subject to mi'ila. On the other hand, Shlamim does not have that din, because Shlamim are Kodshim Kalim. And in essence, Kodshim Kalim are Mamon Balim. They belong to the owners of the Korban until they are brought to the Mikdash and then put on the Mizbeach. That means that as long as you just were Makdish them, there's no din of Mi'ila over there because it doesn't really belong to Hekdesh. They're designated for Hekdesh, but it doesn't belong inherently to Hekdesh. It belongs to the Balim. It's the Mamon Balim. And even after you shecht the animal, there still is no din of Mi'ila until you do Zrikat Adam. Once you've done Zrikat Adam in the Mizbeach, then there are rules about what you have with regards to the remainder of the animal. The animal now gets divided up. A portion of it ends up on the Mizbeach. A portion goes to the Kohanim and a portion goes to the Balim. That portion that goes to the Mizbeach now has a din of Kiddushah, that is, inherent Kiddushah, that if you then misappropriate it, you'll be subject to Mi'ila. And that's what's being taught here. Again, the Shlamim was coming to teach us about what fats from the Pyre Kohen Mashiach go on the Mizbeach, but again, they're written explicitly in the Psukim there. You don't need it for that reason. So then the Gemara says, well, then we'll flip it around and say maybe instead of coming to teach, it's coming to learn. And it's learning that just like the Pyre Kohen Mashiach is subject to Mi'ila, because there it's Kodshei Kodeshim, so do the Zevach HaShlamim. The Shlamim, which are Kodshim Kalim, are also subject to Mi'ila. But by Kodshim Kalim, there's only one small part and moment where there is Mi'ila, and that is post Zrikat Adam, when those fats, the chelev, goes on the Mizbeach. That chelev that goes on the Mizbeach is subject to Mi'ila based on this limud over here. And that teaches you that chelev is subject to the din of Mi'ila. And that's what the Gemara is teaching over here. Makor Mboin Mashiach Yesh Bo Mi'ila, Afshor Zevach HaShlamim Yesh Bo Mi'ila. That's what the source is from that pasuk. Bali Tosafot point out over here, Rashi and Chumash also in commenting on this pasuk points out the same thing. He says that Kashir Yuram, the simple reading of what is here is that the things that are taken off the Zevach HaShlamim should also be taken off the Pyre Kohen Mashiach. And then later on, Rashi says about that, in the Perek Shchitat Kodashim in Zvachim, the Gemara there in Daf Mem Tet, in Ezehu Mikoman, says that the reason it's written there is to teach you, you can't have a Hekesh to a Hekesh inside the world of Kodoshim. And that is because we're going to see in a second that the Parhelam Dabar Shel Tzibor, the fats that are put on the Mizbeach there, are based on the fats that come out of the Parkoin Mashiach. And then from the Parhelam Dabar Shel Tzibor, we then learn to the Seir Avodah Zarah, and possibly to the Seir of Yom HaKippurim, that they also required their fats to be put on the Mizbeach. Now that would have been what's called a Hekesh to a Hekesh, or a Lamed Min HaLamed. Because by Parlam Dovish Shotzibur, there you're learning it from the Parkoin Mashiach. And if you're learning from Parkoin Mashiach, that's the first Hekesh. They're written next to each other in Vayikra. Parlam Dovish Shotzibur comes immediately after Parkoin Mashiach. And it says, by the Parhelam Dovish Shotzibur, Vasala Par, Kashia Sala Parachatat. You're gonna do to this Par, the Parlam Dovish Shotzibur, similar to what you did to the Parachatat. Kenya Selo, Bichiparlam Akoin, Islachavem. So there's a limud that takes whatever was written by the Parkoin Mashiach, and now says it's true by the Parlam Dabar Shel Tzibur. That's one Hekesh. Now you want to extend that from the Parlam Dabar Shel Tzibur to the Seer of Avodah Zarah or to the Seer of Yom Kippurim. That would be a Hekesh to a Hekesh. And that is not allowed in Kodoshim. The reason we know that is because of this Pasuk of a Kasher Yuram, that extra Pasuk. And that's what the Balei HaTosafot note over here as well, which is, so that's what you learn from here, because you learn the Seer of Avodah Zarah from Parlam Dabar Shel Tzibur, and the Parlam Dabar Shel Tzibur is learned from the Parkoin Mashiach. So the Kasher Yuram, which is extraneous by Parkoin Mashiach, which is not necessary over there because all the fats are listed out explicitly by the Parkoin Mashiach. Therefore, the Gemara says the reason it wrote Kasher Yuram over there is to tell you or make it as if it's written literally in the Parlam Dabar Shel Tzibur. And by doing that, then you eliminate the first hekesh, which is from Parkoy Mashiach to Parlam Dover Shel Tzibor, because the Kasher Yiram makes it as if it's written explicitly in the Par Helam Dover Shel Tzibor. And then when you learn from Parlam Dover Tzibor to Seir Avodah Zarah, or to the Seir of Yom HaKippurim, that hekesh is a first stage hekesh, not a double hekesh. And that's how we know that in Kodoshim there's no hekesh to hekesh. Bali Tosfot say, then how is this the source for the fact that there's Mi'ilah by Chelev of Kodshim Kalim if we need it for another limud? So Tosafot gives a number of answers, one of which is, Rabbi Yanai Dahacha, Savar Lakaman Di'ali Feperk Beit Shammai, Yoteret Ushtei HaKlayot, B'Sirei Avodah Zarah, Me'asal HaPar. He learns it out from a different source, which is the pasuk that we quoted before, V'Asal HaPar Kasher Asal HaPar. There's a limud in the Gemara in Zvachim as to what you do with all those extra words that are found there. And they learn different korbanot that are there and learned directly from the Par Helam Dover Shel Tzibor. That's one way to deal with it. Or the other possibility is Rabbi Yanai over here is only an asmachta. It's not the real source for this, because as Tosfot goes on to point out that Rabbi Yanai believes that there's only din of mi'ilah by kodshei berek habayit and not by kodshei mizbeach. And then the Gemara says, what about this limud over here? The Gemara in the end says that this limud is only an asmachta bi'alma. So that's another way to deal with it, that he really does use it for this alternative view, and that Rashi again brings in Chumash as well, that it's teaching you that Ein Lemidim Hekesh Min Hekesh, or he has a different source for that Ein Lemidim Hekesh Min Hekesh. And over here he's using it for the source, the fact that Kodshim Kalim, their Chelev is subject to Me'ilah. And again, that's because by the Kodshei Kodoshim, the Parkoin Mashiach, it's subject to Me'ilah from the moment it's Hekdesh, including the Chelev that's there. Then it teaches you that that which is relevant to the Kodshim Kalim that ends up in the Mizbeach and subject to that Kedusha will also have the same din of Me'ilah. And those are the Chalavim, those are the fats of the Kodshim Kalim post Zvikat Adam that are then designated for the Mizbeach. They are subject to Me'ilah, just like there is Me'ilah by Kodshei Kodoshim, both in their Chelev and the entirety of the animal, because they are Kodshei Kodoshim. Amarle Rabbi Chanina, Ku'ura Zushushana Rabbi. A similar expression that we saw again earlier in the Gemara. You don't like the re-limud that Rabbi brought? Why are you bringing your own limud when Rabbi already, a Tano, brought a limud that already tells us this information? Kol Chelev Lashem. It's written by the Parshat Shlamim in Vayikra, in Paragimel Pasuk Tet Zayin, where it says, V'ktirama Kohen HaMizbecha Lechem Ishe Reach Nichala Kol Chelev Lashem. After describing all the fats of the Kodshim Kalim, meaning the Shlamim that go on the Mizbeach, it says there, Kol Chelev LaHashem, Lirabot Imurei Kodshim Kalim LeMi'ilah. It calls it LaHashem, that it belongs to Hashem, which is, makes it that there's a violation, there's sacrilege, if you misappropriate them, if you utilize them yourself, because they belong to Hashem. That's the source for all Mi'ilah, is that they belong to Hashem, and you're now utilizing them for your own personal benefit. So that Kol Chelev LaHashem, that extraneous term, it already described all the Chelev there that goes to Mizbeach. Why is it telling you that it's LaHashem? To tell you that the emurim, the fats of the Kodshim Kalim, are subject to Me'ilah. Amar Abaye, Itzrich, we need both limudim over here, that of Rabbi Yanai and that of Rabbi. Di'ikat of Rachmana Chelev, if it just wrote Kol Chelev LaHashem, like Rabbi's source is, Havamina Chelev in, that's true of the fats, Hayoteret, the Yoteret HaKaved, which is the call of the liver, Ushtei HaKlayot, and the two kidneys and the fats that are associated with them, lo, that would not be subject to Me'ilah, because they're not called Chelev, Kadav Rachmana, Kasher Yuram. That's what the pasuk by the Par Kohen Mashiach of Kasher Yuram teaches you, because over there it explicitly mentions not just Chelev, it mentions all the items that are part of the Par Kohen Mashiach, including the Shtei HaKlayot and the Yoteret HaKaved. And it says, similarly, anything that's taken off of the Kodshim Kalim, the Shlamim, which also includes the Yoteret HaKaved and the Klayot, so those are all subject to Me'ilah. Iketav Rachmana Kasher Yuram, had it only written Kasher Yuram, that posuk by the Par Kohen Mashiach, Havamina Chelev Aliyo, Teleta Bishor, Lo. You would have thought that by the Par Kohen Mashiach, which is a par and does not have a requirement that the fats of the tail are put on the Mizbeach, you would think that Me'ilah is only those things or those items that are true by a par, not items that are true by a keves, where it also has additional fats that go on the Mizbeach, which are the tail fats, the Chelev Haliyah. You would have thought maybe that's not subject to Me'ilah because they're not relevant by a shor. Katav Rachmano Kol Chelev. That's the pasuk of Rabbi comes to teach you Kol Chelev LaHashem. All Chelev is to Hashem, including the fats of the aliyah. Amalei Rav Mari, the Rav Zvid, he aliyah ikrei chelev. If that's true that the fats of the tail are called chelev, titasar v'achila, then it should also be subject to the rule that one's not allowed to chelev. In non-korbanot, when you shef the behema, the chelev of the behema is asura. That is generally the items that would have gone on the mizbeach, then you cannot eat them when you shef the animal, the chulin. So any chelev would be restricted. Amongst the chelev that goes on the mizbeach is the chelev ha'aliyah. So if you're telling me now that the chelev ha'aliyah is subsumed under the pasuk called chelev la'ashem, which means now it's called chelev, then why isn't it also then subject to the iser of eating chelev by chulin? And we know that chelev ha'aliyah is not included in those chalavim. But based on your drasha now, it should be. Amalei alecha makra, to you, the pasuk says in Parshat Tzav, with regards to the shlamim there, it says in Perek Zayin Pasuk Chav Gimel, this is the rule about chulin, that you're not allowed to eat any of these fats. In there, it puts, subsumes three animals, all of which are behemot tehorot, which we saw in the Mishnah already, that chelev only applies to a behemah Torah, kosher behemah, and that is shor, kesev, and eiz. But it parallels those three animals together and says, kol chelev shor kesev eiz, davera shaveh b'shor b'kesev eiz. Only fats that apply to all three animals are restricted. The chelev aliyah is only relevant by a kesev or by a sheep. It's not relevant by a shor, by a par, and it's not relevant by an ez, by a goat. So therefore, it's not included in the restriction of achilat chelev because it's not applicable to all the animals that are covered by the isur of chelev. Ravashi amar, chelbo aliyah yikrai, chelev stama lo yikrai. The chelev aliyah is called the fats of the tail, but it's not called fats without the modifier or qualifier of aliyah. So yes, it's known as chelev aliyah, but it's not known as chelev by itself. And therefore, the pasuk of kol chelev won't apply to it in terms of the restriction, lo techelu. The Gemara says, elamiyat, if that's the case, lo yumaluba, then you lost the ability to put it into milah. Because the source for that pasuk that brings it into milah is kol chelev la'ashem. And there it's speaking about stam chelev and not chelev with a qualifier on it. Elamachavarta kid Rav Zvid. The answer must be like Rav Zvid, which is, yes, chelev aliyah is called chelev, but it's not subject to the restriction of eating chelev by chulin, because it's not equated, or it's not found in all shor, kesef, and eiz, and therefore it's not subject to that restriction of not eating chelev. Mashen gein b'dam. That is not true by dam. Menahane mile. How do you know this is true? Now, over here, it seems to be that the Gemara has an inherent stira in it, because before by the chelev, it wanted to know, how do you know that mi'ilah is applicable by chelev? And said, menahani mile. Where's the source for this? Which means that the default is that it wouldn't be subject to mi'ilah. Then by dam, we come along and say, menahani mile. How do we know dam is not subject to mi'ilah? And then it brings a proof text to that, which means the default is that dam would be subject to mi'ilah. So inherently, the Gemara seems to have a steer here as to what the default status is. Is the default status of a korban that it is subject to mi'ilah, and you have to bring me a pasuk to prove otherwise? That's what we're about to do with dam. Or is the default status that it is not subject to mi'ilah, and then you need a proof text to bring it in and include it in a mi'ilah, which would be the case that we had by menahani mile of chelev. But that means that the default in each of these situations is assumed to be the opposite. And so then how do you reconcile that? Now that could be answered by the fact that by chelev we're speaking about kodshim kalim. The Gemara wants to know, how do you know that kodshim kalim are subject to mi'ilah, or at least the chalavim of the kodshim kalim are subject to mi'ilah? And that's why the default by Kodshim Kalim is that they're not subject to Mi'ilah, because they are Kodshim Kalim. And Ochanami, by Kodshim Kodashim, the default would have been that they are subject to Mi'ilah. Our question's about Kodshim Kalim. On the other hand, here, by Dam, the question's not about Kodshim Kalim. There's questions about Kodashim in general, including Kodshim Kodashim. And over there, Kodshim Kodashim, the default status is that they are subject to Mi'ilah, and therefore you need a proof text to say that it's not subject to Mi'ilah. That's how the Maram Shif reconciles between the two questions of the Gemara that seem to propose a different default status in each case. And that is to say that the question before was about Kodshim Kalim, where the default status is that there is no Mi'ilah. That's why you need a proof text to include them. Over here by Dam, the question is about even Kodshei Kodashim, where the default is that they are subject to Mi'ilah. Then you need a proof text to take them out. And that's what we're doing now. Amar Ula, Damar Kura, they're bringing a postok from Parshat Achrei Mot with regards to Kodshei Chutz. And over there, there's a pasuk that restricts dam, like many other places in the Torah where there's a restriction against eating the dam. And it says over there that ish mi beit yisrael min hagera gar betocham asher yochal kol dam natati panai benefesh ha'achelet adam v'chirati oto mikarev hamah. That is a chiyuv karet for eating dam. And it says the reason that dam is restricted is ki benefesh habasar badam hu, because the life force of the animal is in the blood. Ve'ani netativ lachem al hamizbeach lechaper al nafshoteichem. And I gave you the blood for the purposes of putting it on the mizbeach to atone for your sins. Ki adam hu benefesh yechaper, because the dam is the source of the kapara, because it is the life force of the animal. So now we're going to have three different limudim from that pasuk that take different words of that pasuk. Amar ula, damar kra, lachem. That it says in that pasuk that the dam is lachem, shelachem yehei. It's yours. Meaning that it's not subject to sacrilege. It's not subject to misappropriation from hekdesh because it's lachem. It's your dam. It belongs to you. The Bei Rabbi Shmuel Tano, lechaper. The pasuk says that the purpose of the dam is lechaper. Lechapara nitati velo lemeila. That's the only thing that dam has in it is a din of kapara, bringing atonement. It doesn't have a din of mi'ila. It's an exclusionary term. Kapara, yes. Mi'ila, no. Rabbi Yochanan Amar, Amakra, who? The pasuk says who, which who? Lifnei kapara, klachar kapara. Before kapara has the same din as post kapara. Malachar kapara, ain bo mi'ila. Just like after kapara, there is no mi'ila in the dam. Af lifnei kapara, ain bo mi'ila. So too, before the kapara, there is no mi'ila. The word who is behavyato yehei. Its status remains static throughout the period. That means both before kapara and after kapara, it is not subject to mi'ilah, because afterwards it isn't subject to mi'ilah. So too beforehand, it's not subject to kapara. Ve'ema hu la'achar kapara k'lifnei kapara. Why don't you just say just the opposite? That after kapara, it has the same din as lifnei kapara. Ma lifnei kapara yesh bo mi'ilah. Again, the default would be that there would be mi'ilah with regards to the dam. And so therefore, lifnei kapara, it should be subject to mi'ilah. Af la'achar kapara yesh bo mi'ilah. So to after kapara, it also will be subject to mi'ila. My answer is, ein lecha davar shenaseh mitzvato umolim bo. There's no item where, if you've already accomplished the mitzvah, that there is a restriction of mi'ila that is residual in this item. Once you've accomplished the mitzvah, once you've done what was demanded of you with this item, it's no longer subject to mi'ila because you're not misappropriating anymore. You used it for what its intended purpose was. And therefore, it's not subject to sacrilege. It's not subject to mi'ilah because you did what you were supposed to do with the item. And therefore, it's no longer a misappropriation. Tosfot questions the whole assumption here that there's no mi'ilah before kapara, as well as the fact that there's no mi'ilah after kapara. And that is because, as the Rabbeinu Tam brings over here, that if your meki's dam, if you bloodlet an animal when it is kodesh, then that dam that you take out of there is subject to mi'ilah. That shows you that lifnei kapara, there is a din of mi'ilah with the dam. Rabbeinu Tam distinguishes between the animal prior to its shechita and the kabbalat adam, whereby the blood of that animal is subject to anything of that animal, which is that it's hekdesh. It's kodshei kodashim, and therefore it's subject to mi'ilah. So even the dam prior to the point of kapara is subject to mi'ilah. It's only once the dam comes into the position of being able to provide kapara, that's when the mi'ilah drops away, and that's only post-shechita, when you've done the kabbalat adam. At that point, there's no longer any more mi'ilah, because that's the lifnei kapara that the Gemara is speaking about here. Lifnei kapara doesn't mean always. It means after the point where it is ra'ui lekapara. That means post-shechita, prior to being put on the mizbeach, that's the window of time with lifnei kapara, where there is no mi'ilah. Prior to that point in time, there is mi'ilah. Post that time, that's the achar kapara, that's the hekesh we do over here, there's also no mi'ilah. And that the Rabbeinu Tam questions as well, because the Gemara Mila tells us that once the blood drained out of the Migdash, it used to go into the Amata Mayim, the sewer line that dropped that went out into Nachal Kidron. And then when it was in Nachal Kidron, the farmers used to want that water because it was rich in proteins and it was a great fertilizer. And there the Gemara says that it's subject to Mi'ila and that they have to pay hekdesh for that dam that is now flowing out. And actually, in the excavations that they did on the southern and eastern side of the Mikdash, there is a staircase there that has a drainage line that goes in between the stairs that actually carry the Amat HaMayim out towards Nachal Kidron. And they did tests over there and they saw that there was organic material, meaning dam, that flowed out of there. And that's what's being described there in the Mishnah, that it flowed out of the Mikdash in that sewer line and went out to Nachal Kidron, and there it was sold for fertilizer, but it had to be paid for because otherwise it's a problem of Mi'ilah. That shows you that even after Kapara, there is a din of Mi'ilah. Therefore, the Rabbeinu Tam concludes that Yesh Lamar, the Mi'ilah Hatam, the Rabbanan. That Mi'ilah is only a Din Rabbanan, it's not Mi'ilah Doraita. It just doesn't look good, or it doesn't look right, and therefore the Mikdash charged them for the waters, so it doesn't look like they're getting benefit from Hekdesh. But that's not that it's really subject to Mi'ilah, Mi'ilah Doraita. So now the Gemara says, is that really true below? Is it really true that once the mitzvah is accomplished, there's no longer a din of mi'ilah? V'arei tumata deshen, then aseh mitzvato. But the mitzvah of tumata deshen, even after the mitzvah of tumata deshen is accomplished, nevertheless, there still is mo'alim bo. There still is a din of mi'ilah. That's based on the pasuk tichtiv. When you take off the ashes from the mizbeach, which is what the requirement is by tumata deshen, you scoop off the ashes from the pile of coals that are on the mizbeach each day, and then you take that b'samo etzel mizbeach. You place down those ashes on the ground next to the mizbeach, and then Rashi quotes the Gemara, which says that it was miraculously absorbed in the place on the side of the mizbeach. It says there ve'irim et hadeshen tochal ha'esh b'samo etzel mizbeach l'meid sheton sima v'gniza. That it requires that it be placed there in particular, and then it requires gniza, meaning that it's then taken and absorbed into the ground miraculously. If it wasn't, then you'd also have to remove it or do something with it. And that shows that it's a surbana. Even though the mitzvah was that the korban was put on the mizbeach, was burnt to ashes, the mitzvah is done. And the removal of the ashes from the mizbeach, that mitzvah is also completed. But even so, it says samo sham, that you have to place it there. It requires gniza, and you can't get any benefit from it. So in both those cases, you finish the mitzvah of bringing the korban, you finish the mitzvah of doing the tumata deshen, and yet it's still subject to nisr hana'ah. It's still subject to mi'ilah. If that's the case, even post the accomplishment of the mitzvah, we see sometimes there's still a residual problem of mi'ilah. My answer is, that's not a problem. Mishum tavai, tumata deshen, big day kuna, shnek tovim habayim keachat. In both of those places, there is a requirement for gniza. And that tells you that these are the exceptions to the rule rather than the paradigm. So yes, it's true by Tumata Deshen, but it's also true by the big day kahuna from Yom HaKippurim. At the end of the service of Yom HaKippurim, it says when the Kohen Gadol strips off his big day lavan after he has finished up the avodah of Yom HaKippurim, there it says about those bigadim, uvaron el omoed upashat bigdei abad asher lavash bivoel hakodesh v'inicham sham, that you have to leave them there. Meaning that it requires gniza, and you may no longer use them, not for a Kohen Hedjot, who wears the four bigadim all year round, and not for a Kohen Gadol in the subsequent Yom HaKippurim, they have to be nicham sham. So you see there, these are two mitzvot where there's a requirement for gniza, there's a requirement that even post their utilization, or post the mitzvah being completed, they still require gniza. But again, when you have two, that means that's the exception to the rule, and not the rule itself. And therefore, if you have two psukim telling you the same din, they're no longer paradigmatic, they become the exception to the rule. Where it says, anichal the Rabbanon, that works well according to the Rabbanon who interpret that pasuk in Parshat Achrimot to mean, damrei v'nicham sham lamed shetunim gniza. Nicham sham means that they require gniza and nobody can use them, not a Kohen Hedjot, not a Kohen Gadol. El Rabbi Dosa, who argues in the Gemara Yoma on the Chachamim and says, damar, shlo yishtamesh b'hem yom kippurim acher, Nicham Sham just means that they are precluded from being used by another Kohen Gadol. But a Kohen Hedjot could use those Begadim. Therefore, there's no din of Gniza with regards to this clothing. Then we're back to square one, which is that you only have Tumata Deshen, which tells you that even post the mitzvah, there's still a din of Isur Hana'ah and Isur Mi'ilah. And if you only have one example, that becomes paradigmatic in nature. So, Ma'ikah the Meimar, El Mishum Davai Tumata Deshen Ve'egla Arufa. Because I have two psukim, which is Tumata Deshen and Egla Rufa. Shnek Tovim Abayim Kechat. They are two psukim telling you the same thing. Shnek Tovim Abayim Kechat. Eim Elamdim. They don't teach you that din. Because by the Egla Rufa, it says over there, Roridu Zignei Ha'ir Ha'i Yate Egla El Nachalei Tan Asher Lo Ye'aved Bo Velo Yizareya Varfu Sham Et Egla Benachal. Avo Pisha Nase Mitzvata Asura Bana. Even though the mitzvah has been completed, the word sham over there teaches you varfu sham, sham teik vurata, that after you do the arifa of the egla arufa, it has to be buried there. There meaning that there's an isur hana, there's an isur of misappropriation afterwards. So again here, that's a second paradigm, quote unquote, that teaches you the same din. When you have two, it's the exception and not the paradigm. Therefore, that's how Rabbi Dosa will also say that it's not a paradigmatic din. It says, anich laman damari malam din. That's true of the one who says when you have two exceptions, that's considered to be an exception and not paradigmatic. There is a view that once you have three is it considered to be an exception, but two are still considered to be paradigmatic in nature. Then what are you going to do in this case? You only have two according to Rabbi Dosa. For the Chachamim, you solve the problem now because they actually have three. They have Tumat Deshen, the Big Dekunah and Yom HaKippurim, and the Egla Rufa. According to Rabbi Dotso, it says the big day kuna and Yom HaKippurim are not subject to an Isser Hana, don't need to be put in Ganiza. He only has Egel Arufa and the Trumat HaDeshen. So where's the third exception to the rule? So Gemara says that's not a problem because over here, Trei Mi'ute Ktive. There are two Mi'utim, both by Trumat HaDeshen and Egel Arufa. There's a specific Mi'ut telling you that it's uniquely associated with this mitzvah, nothing else. Hachak Tiv, over here by Trumat HaDeshen, it says Vissamo Eitzelam Izbeach. And Hotam Ktiv Ha'arufa. That this is true only of the Egel Arufa, and not true of all mitzvot. And Misamo Eitzel HaMizbeach is also only that requires Sima Eitzel HaMizbeach, but nothing else. And those Miutim then tell you that they are not paradigmatic in nature, but rather uniquely associated with these mitzvot. The Bali HaTosafot over here asked similar to what they asked before with regards to the Izim, Tema, the Bechad Sagi. All you need is one Miut over here. You don't need two Miutim. As long as you have one Miut over here, that would be enough to tell you that these aren't paradigmatic in nature. Why do you need two Miutim over here? He leaves it as a tzarichil and similar to what he did back on Kuf Yud Gimel Amud Bet when he asked the same question. Now the Gemara says, Utlata Krai Lama Li B'dam. When it's speaking about the Isur of eating Dam, over there we quoted three different opinions as to what the source is for the fact that Dam is not subject to Mi'ila. And over there, we quoted three different sources. One from Ulo, one from Dan Debei Rabbi Shmuel, and one from Rabbi Yochanan. And interesting enough, the Gemara brings Ula's first, then Dan Debei Rabbi Shmuel, and then Rabbi Yochanan, which, first of all, is somewhat backwards. You bring a Tana after you bring an Amora. And even in the order of the Amoraim, Rabbi Yochanan should have come before Ula. So they point out that the Drashot are brought in the order that they are found in the Pasuk. And so even though, again, chronologically, you would have put Tana Debei Rabbi Shmuel before Rabbi Yochanan, Rabbi Yochanan before Ula, nevertheless, over here, they put in the order of the Pasuk, but still we have three limudim. So why do you need three limudim? So the Gemara answers, throughout they cry, lama li b'dam, chadim utei min notar, want to tell you that there's no din of notar by dam, chadim utei min mi'ila, want to tell you there's no din of mi'ila by dam, which is what we asked in the beginning, minahane mi'le, how do we know that that's the case? Chadim utei min tuma. And wanted to tell you that Dam is not subject to the din of Tumah. Once again, Rashi over here says Tumat Ha-Guf. I mean, if a person has Tumat Ha-Guf and goes to eat the Dam, he'll be subject to a penalty for eating Dam, but he won't be subject to a penalty of eating Kodoshim B'Tumat Ha-Guf. So those are the three Mi'utim that are found over there. Tosvot again asks, why do you need three Mi'utim? Because the Gemara learns out Notar and Tumah from Chilul Chilul, which means if Dam isn't subject to one of them, it won't be subject to the other one because of that Gezerah Shavah between them. And therefore, you should have only needed one Mi'ut over here, not multiple Mi'utim. Tosafot leaves that as a Tzarech Iyun. Although Tosafot in Yoma, Daf Samach Amud Aleph, asks these questions, both why you need two Mi'utim and why you need a Mi'ut by Notar and Tamei. And Tosafot over there answers with regards to why you need two Mi'utim, even though one would have been sufficient over here. Tosafot says that had it only been one Mi'ut over here, so even though Shnei Ktuvim Abayim Kechad Melamdim, and then the Miut, you'd think, would have taken it and said, no longer can it be the case. He says that rather, each one of those Limudim is a Miut, and then this becomes a third Miut, and therefore becomes Shlosha Miutim. And even though by Shlosha we ain't Melamdim, over here it'd be different because two of the Miutim are found in the same place. The Pasuk itself, plus the Miut in that Pasuk, and it makes it a Miut Acha Miut, the Rabot. And therefore it would be inclusionary and would cause the limud to take place. And therefore Tosafot says you need two miutim over here to prevent that type of limud from coming out. And that he says in the Gemara on Daf Samach Amud Aleph in Yoma, where he answers this question with regards to the parallel Gemara that we have here that's found in Yoma, as well as that question that we asked on Kuf Yud Gimel Amud Bet with regards to the Izim. As far as Notar and Tameh, he also asked that question there, and over there he gives a more extensive answer, which is that only things that are written explicitly by the items are subject to the Gezeir Shavah. Something that's not written explicitly, but just comes out of a Miut, we wind up learning through the Gezeir Shavah, and that's why it needs a separate Miut by each one of the items, because they wouldn't have been subject to the din of the Gezeir Shavah. But then the Gemara says, what about Pigol? You said that Dam in the Mishnah is not subject to Pigol, Notar, Tamei, and Mi'ilah. So now you got me Mi'ilah, Notar, and Tamei. You didn't get me Pigol. That the Gemara says you don't need a Miut for. So about me Pigol, Lo Tzarich Kra. You don't need a Pasuk to exclude it from Pigol. That's not. Because the requirements of Pigol, which we spent plenty of time on in Zvachim and in Menachot, are Kol She'esh Lo Matirim. Anything that has a Matir, Ben Adam, Ben Mizbeach, whether that is something that is matirit to go on the Mizbeach, or matirit to be eaten by Adam, that is chayivin alav. That you're subject to a din of pigul. Chayivin alav mishum pigul. the dam gufe matiru. The other problem is that dam is not nitara yidei something else. It itself is the matir. It is the matir for allowing the items that go on the mizbeach to go on the mizbeach. It's also the matir for allowing the korban to be eaten by the kohanim or by the baalim. And that's why, if you have a machshavet pigul, while you're doing one of the avodat adam, that creates pigul in the, either the chalavim or in the basar of the animal, because those are either going on the mizbeach or going to adam. But that's because dam is the matir for those items. But dam itself has no matir that is matir it to go on the mizbeach. And so if that's the case, it's not subject to pigul, because pigul is learned from korban shlamim. And by korban shlamim, as the Gemara says, ma shlamim yesh lehem matirim ladam lizbeach, chayvin aleihem mishum pigul, af kol. So too, only things that have matirim are subject to the din of pigul, which is not true by dam, which is a matir itself. It's like other items like komet, ktoret, minchat kohanim, which are listed there in the Mishnayot in both zvachim and menochot. And so only items that have a matir are subject to pigul, and dam, since it itself is a matir, isn't subject to pigul, and we saw that in the Mishnayot, in Zvachim, the dam is not subject to pigul because of that requirement that it have a matir and not be a matir itself. Okay, with that we end the 8th parak, Adon Alach Kol HaBasar. Now we begin the 9th parak. As the Baal Tosafot point out over here, the 9th parak seems to come out of the middle of nowhere about Tumat Ochlim, and then what's it doing over here? The Baal Tosafot say that it's really a continuation of HaBehema Mekasha, which we did way back in the 4th parak. It mentioned over there that a shliyah, the placenta, is not mitamei tumat ochlim and not tumat nevela. And because of that mishnah back in Amikasha in the 4th parak, this parak should have come immediately afterwards, because it's describing exactly those issues of tumat ochlim and tumat nevela. So then why is it found over here? That's because the Gemara got sidetracked by a number of other items that are mentioned in the Mishnayot. And that's what the Baal Tosafot would say, because in Bayim HaMaksha, you saw over there about a ben tet chai, ta'un shkita, that if you have a 9-month fetus that is viable, then it requires sepet shkita. And the Gemara said, because of that, you're chayav voto ved beno. So therefore, it brought afterwards the perek of oto ved beno. And then once it spoke about oto ved beno, and spoke about shkita she'inu ru'uya, because you're not allowed to shech them on the same day, and that makes them, disqualifies them for the mizbeach, then right afterwards it spoke about kisui adam, which also is only a din that has application when it's a shkita ru'ya, not when it's a shkita she'en ruya. And once it dealt with kisui adam, which has application by chaya and oaf, then it spoke about gida nasheh, which is noeg b'chaya, but not by oaf. And then after it spoke about the gida nasheh, which is, then it spoke about cooking the gida nasheh and the dinim that are associated with cooking the gida nasheh together with the thigh, then it moved into the issues of bliyat isur, which are the subject of the parak of Kol HaBasar. And once we completed all of that, on all of those sidetracks, now we get back to what was mentioned in Behema Makasha, and that brings us into our Or Varotev, which is now a continuation of that Mishnah that deals with Tumat Oklim and Tumat Nevela. Now the Mishnah begins. Or, when it comes to the skin, Varotev, and we'll call it loosely the gravy, the Gemara is going to deal with all these items, the Kippah, which is the sediment at the bottom of the pot. Rashi already discussed this before. It was the firma. It's the hardened pieces of meat at the bottom. But Rashi over here says it's tavlin. It's the spices that are in the pot or in the item that is being cooked. The spices themselves are not ochel, but they are there to add on or to give flavor to the ochel. Halal, which the Gemara will bring a machloket as to what the interpretation of that is. But the loose translation in English is ofal, which is something that is ancillary to the primary item that you're eating, or the meat of the animal. Vatsamot, and the bones. Rashi over here makes the claims that these are atzamot sheish ben moach. It's only true of bones that have marrow in them, because the marrow is ochel. And then the etzem, the bone, is a shomer, is something that's keeping it or preserving it. But if you look in the Rambam in Hilchot Tumat Ochlim, in Perek Dalet Halacha Dalet over there, the Rambam doesn't make that qualification. He says, Vatsamot hamichubarot bebasar. Any etzem that has meat on the bone, that is true over here, not just a bone that has marrow in it. So that is a difference between Rashi and the Rambam as to what is meant here by the etzemot. Vagidim, and the sinews or the arteries. Veakarnayim, and the horns. Veatalfayim, and the hooves of the animal. As far as the horns are concerned, the Gemara is going to tell us it's not all the horns. The horns are inedible pieces. It's only where you cut the horns and then the animal bleeds in that location, that part of the horn is protective in nature to the basar that sits there. And that part of the horn then is classified as protective, and that's classified as the shomer, and it can be added towards that minimum shear of a kibetza. In addition, same thing is true by the talfayim, by the hooves. Now over there, the Gemara never makes that qualification. It sounds like the hooves in their entirety are providing a shmirah to the softer basar or edible parts that are by the hoof. The Baal Tosfot mentioned that the Mishnah does not mention tzipornayim, does not mention the nails, which are also inedible items that are protecting the or below them. And that's because tzipornayim lo shaychi ela ba'of. They're only relevant by birds or by fowl, poultry. They're not relevant by cases of animals. And the Mishnah is only mentioning things that are also applicable by a behema. And maybe it's because there's another Mishnah or there's another Tanaic work that actually mentions them, and therefore they're not included in our Mishnah. Or it's maybe because by the talfayim, by the hooves, the entire hoof is considered a shomer. By the tzipornayim, it depends on where the nail is. It's only the nail that covers skin that is considered to be a shomer. The part that extends out beyond the skin that it covers is not considered to be a shomer, and therefore it's not definitive in nature, and that's why it's not considered in our Mishnah. Mitztarfim latamei tumat ochlim. All these items can be added towards the minimum shiur for tumat ochlim. Now, we've seen this machloket many times. Everybody agrees with regards to tumat ochlim, in order to convey tumah, it has to be the size of a kibetza. So everybody agrees here that the Mishnah is relevant with regards to conveyance of tumat ochlim, that you need a minimum shiur of kibetza, and these items can be added towards that minimum shiur of a kibetza. Rashi, the Rabbeinu Tam, different places in Shas have different views with regards to this, but many times suggest that even for acceptance of tumah, you need a minimum of a kibetza. So this would be true also in terms of accepting of tumah. If there is a minimum threshold of a kibetza, versus most of the other Rishonim will believe that even a koshu is subject to tumat ochlim, it only can convey it with the minimum three shiur of kibetza. They believe even to accept tumah, you need a minimum threshold of a kibetza. So then this would be true also in the acceptance of tumah. And all of these items that are considered not to be in and of themselves ochel, but somehow they are ancillary to the ochel, they can be added up to get to the minimum shiur of a kibetza. And that we'll see in the first line of the Gemara as to why that is the case. But these are all considered to be shomrim. They're all considered to be something that protects or helps to hold on to or preserve the basar, the edible part that's there. And therefore they're considered an extension of the ochel itself, and they're counted towards that kibetza. But that's not true of alo tumat nevelot. That's not true when it comes to tumat nevela. By tumat nevela, it has to be nevela. And there, Rashi quotes from the Gemara that we saw earlier with regards to tumat nevelot, that it says, bin nivlata, that the tumat nevela is bin nivlata, velo ba'atzamot, velo begidim, not the bones, not the sinews, velo ba'or, and not the skin or the hide. Avagir gav d'shomer avya, even though it's protective in nature, it still is not added towards the minimum shiur of a nevela. It's not mitzareif, and therefore the kezayit nevela you need in order to be chayav, or in order to convey tumah, it can only be made up of basar. It can't be made up of all of these ancillary items. And again, the Gemara will speak about this in the first line as to what the difference is over here. Now, that is only true if you believe that the gidim are eno benotein tam. But if you believe that the gidim are benotein tam, then we saw earlier in our Masechta, as well as what we saw in the Gemara Pesachim, then the gidim are subject to the din of basar, and they're called a nevela, and they would be subject to tumat nevela. Although the Rashash over here wants to say that even according to the one who says that the gidim are benotein tam, they still don't have a din of nevela because of the miut of the nevela ta. That the miut that comes out of the word over here will be memayit gidim, even if they have a din of nevela normally. They'll have a din of nevela for the isur achila that's associated with them because they're notein tam, but they will not have a din of nevela for the tum'ah that is associated with them because of the miut of the nevela ta. So interestingly enough, they will have a bifurcated din, which is that they will be subject to the din of Isra Achila, but they won't be subject to the din of Tumat Nevela. And that's only according to one who says that Yesh B'Gidim Benotein Tam. According to the one who says Ein Benotein Tam, then they are excluded from the Nevela Ta, both from Tumah and from the problem of Achila, because it's like eating eights, it's not like eating a Nevela. Tiyotzebo, there's a similar concept, the Shochet Be'imat Me'ya. Someone who shechs a non-kosher animal, Le'oved Kochavim, for a non-Jew. Umifarkeset, and it is still flopping around, it still has a life force in it, after it is shechted, mitamat tumat ochlim, avalo tumat nevelot, ad shetamut, o ad shetizet rosha. The tumat ochlim is immediately after the shechita is completed. The tumat nevela only devolves upon the animal once it's completely dead. So that either means that it has stopped moving, or if you sever the head completely, In that instance, it's automatically rendered a nevela immediately, and then tumat nevela applies. So a similar concept here that tumat ochlim comes before or is more expansive than tumat nevela. And that is tumat ochlim is already relevant to the animal in between the period of time of the shechita till it's fully dead. There it's subject to tumat ochlim. Tumat nevela only kicks in once the animal is completely dead. Now Rashi over here makes it clear that you need all four of the conditions in order for this to be true. The four conditions that are mentioned over here are a Jew is doing it, there is shechita being done over here, and it has to be a non-kosher animal, and it has to be for a non-Jew. Those are the four qualifications over here, and Rashi explains why that is. Because, first of all, for a non-Jew, shechita is meaningless. Shechita is no different than any other method of killing the animal, and therefore they don't have any din that once you do shechita on an animal, it's deemed to be dead. For Jews, shechita is the mechanism for killing the animal that makes it mutar b'achila, and therefore, post-shechita, it's already classified as being dead, quote-unquote, for the Jew, and it's not Eiver Min HaChai, and a Jew can eat from such an animal, even though it's not completely dead, meaning that the life force is not exited completely. Shechita is the matir over there. So first of all, shechita for a Jew is different than it is for a Goy. That's why you need a Jew doing the shechita over here, because shechita has meaning for a Jew, doesn't have meaning for a non-Jew. Number two is that it has to be done through shechita because this din or this special dispensation that shechita has impact of deeming the animal dead is only true by shechita. It's not true by any other method of killing the animal. Nechira doesn't have that din. Shechita has that din because that's a proper killing of the animal. That's what Torah prescribes. If you do it, then the animal is deemed to be dead. Number three is the fact that it has to be done to a non-kosher animal because by a kosher animal, if you do shechita, enochanami, you have exactly this din. Tumat ochlim kicks in right away because it is roi l'achila for the Jew immediately afterwards. And the tumat nevela isn't relevant there because tumat nevela, if it's shechted, won't happen to such an animal. So by tumat, we can't be speaking about a kosher animal. And the fourth thing is that you have to be doing it for a non-Jew. Because if you're doing it for a Jew, the item is inedible anyway because it's a non-kosher animal. It's only subject to tumat ochlim if someone there is to eat it. And that's true when you're doing it on behalf of a goy. Because of that, you're machshiv the animal, the Jew, who uses shechita normally. And by a kosher animal, it would deem it dead. He thinks that the animal is being deemed dead, but he does a shechita to a non-kosher animal. That non-kosher animal is ra'ui la'achila for the goy, and therefore there's a shava of the animal to be ochel there post-shechita, prior to the death of the animal. And that's why there's tumat ochlim in between the point of shechita and the point of the death of the animal where it turns into tumat nevela. And that's what renders this din, or unique din, in the Mishnah, and as Rashi says over here, it requires all four of those assumptions in order for it to be true. And now the Mishnah gives a summary of what we said until now, which is Riba l'tamei tumat ochlim, imash Riba l'tamei tumat nevelot. That tumat ochlim applies in more instances or more situations than tumat nevela. That's both from a quantitative standpoint, which means that more items are included in tumat ochlim to get to the minimum shiur than tumat nevela. And that's also from a qualitative standpoint, which is that tumat nochlim kicks in at an earlier point than tumat nevela, because shechita renders something into ochel, even though nevela only takes place when the animal is completely dead. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, ha'alal le'mikunas. If you have this alal, which again is going to be defined by the Gemara, machloket amoraim, as to what the alal is, if it's gathered together in a single location, yeshbo kezayit b'makom echad, if it has a kezayit in that single location, chayav alav. Here we're speaking about tumat nevela, so that would give you the minimum shiur that's required for tumat nevela, which is a kezayit, and the halal there would be subject to tumat nevela, and then if you come into contact with it and then enter the mikdash or eat kodoshim, you're going to be chayav karet, or if it's done b'shogeg, you'd be chayav a chatat, korban olev yoreid. But that's only true if it's mikunas in one place, and obviously the chachamim or the tanakam over here disagree with Rabbi Yehuda's contention, but again we'll leave that to the Gemara, where the Gemara discusses what exactly this halal is. Gemara says, Tanina l'hadetanu Rabbanan. Our Mishnah is supportive of what we know from the Rabbanan, from a Braita. Shomrim l'tuma kala. Shomrim have application by tuma kala, meaning by tuma tochlim, which is a lighter form of tuma. Lighter form of tuma is a tuma that is not inherent in the object. It's only tuma that can be brought or conveyed to the item. It's subject to tuma. It can have tuma. It can convey tuma, but it's not inherently tame. So shomrim apply to tuma kala. Below shomrim, the tumah chamura. There's no concept of shomrim by tumah chamura. Tumah chamura means inherent tumah. And that's exactly what was said in our Mishnah. When it comes to nevela, the nevela doesn't have all these ancillary items included towards the minimum shiur. Even though they're shomrim of the basar, they're not counted towards that tumat nevela. On the other hand, by tumat ochlim, those shomrim are counted towards that minimum shiur. And so you see over there that they do have application to tumat kala or tumat ochlim. And that's being laid out by our Mishnah. Shomrim le tumat kala minalan. How do we know there's a concept of shomrim by lighter forms of tumat where it's not inherent tumat, but tumat that is conveyed to the item or conveyed from the item? The Tana, the Bei Rabbi Yishmael, I'll call Zerez Zerua. This is the pasuk that's speaking about tumat ochlim in Parshat Shmini, whereby you need or require hechsher the kabel tumah. There has to be a liquid, one of the seven liquids that the Torah says prime the item to be ready to be kabel tumah. It says over there, I'll call Zerez Zerua, about seeds. So that's speaking about seeds. Kederach shebnei adam motzim lizria, the way that people take those seeds out to plant them. Chita beklipata. Usu ora biklipata, v'adashim biklipata. You take out a kernel of wheat to plant it while it's still in its shell, and you take out a barley seed with its shell on it in order to plant it. And similarly with lentils, you take them out with their shell on them. And that's called ochlim. That's called zera zerua. That zera zerua is defined by not only the seed itself, but even the item that's protecting the seed, which is the shell around the seed. So you see there, that's included in the items that are subject to tumat ochlim. Tosafot over here is a little perplexed by the Gemara suggesting that the seeds are put into the ground with their shells on it, because the Gemara in Ketubot says, Ma chitash nikbera aruma. A seed is put into the ground naked, meaning without its shell on it, and yet it grows with many coverings and shells atop of it when it regrows into a developed stalk of wheat or stalk of barley. So you see that the seed is planted without its klipa on it. So how come the Gemara over here is saying that the seed is planted with its klipa? The Tosafot gives the answer that over here is what the standard default situation was, that most people planted them with the shells on it. Another thing, the Gemara Ketubot is saying, if you do plant it without the shell, it still will grow back, and it will still have many coverings on it. So that's just saying, if you do plant it without a shell. Although the Tosafot Rosh says just the opposite, which is that normally they were planted without a shell on it, but there are people who plant it with a shell on it, and because of that, it has a din of Shomer over here, and the Achronim on top of that try to suggest that that means that it's subject to Minhag HaMakom, that whether the shell of the seed is considered to be a shomer or not will have to do with what the normal practice is in that location. If they plant it normally with the shell on it, it will be considered a shomer. If they plant it without the shell on it, then it would not be considered a shomer, because people normally shell the seeds before they plant them, and then it wouldn't be considered zerizeruah. And therefore, this din will be subject to the practice of the place as to whether it's classified as a shomer or not as a shomer. Velo shomrim le tumah chamura, but that's not true by tumah chamura, midolon. How do we know that? The Tanur Banan, this is what Rashi quoted on the Mishnah, b'nevelata, where it says, v'chi yimut b'nevema shilachem lo ochla, hanogea b'nevelata, yitma ad arev. So there it says, b'nevelata, and the nevela itself, velo ba'or, shein alav kezayit, and not on the or that has less than a kezayit, basar of nevela on it. Yochol hanogea kenegeda basar miachurav lo yetameh. You would think that means that even if you touch the or the hide where the basar was on the other side, there was a kezayit of basar, maybe you wouldn't be tameh. Tamadomar, the end of the pasuk says, yitma ad arev, my kamar. What is being said here in this limud from the braita that we just brought? Amarova of Amila Kadi. Some say that Rava said it. Some say that the Chochem Kadi said it. Rashi brings in other places that Kadi means without attribution. So here we're saying in the name of Rava, some say it was without attribution. Chasure Mechzera. The bright that we just brought is missing some conjunction words. You only become tamei tumat nevela when there is a kezayit basar there, and not from ve'or mashlimo lekezayit, and there where the hide adds up to kezayit. Yochol shani motzi af or sheish alav kezayit. I would have thought maybe you exclude also a hide that has a kezayit basar in it. Hanugeya keneged basar me'achurav. Yecholo yeh tamei. Maybe you would think that person doesn't come tamei. Ba'filo maseh. Yad nami lo avid, and it doesn't then function as a yad. Tamalomar yitma. That's what it comes to teach you, yitma. And what is being said over here by Rova or by Kadi or with that attribution is that there are different mechanisms which we're going to see in tomorrow's daf from the Mishnah in Uksim for extensions of items themselves. And that's one is a shomer, something that protects or guards the item. And there's something called a yad, which is an ability to hold the item or gives you access to the item. And so what it's saying over here is that nevela is not subject to shomer, because the word nevelata tells you only nevela itself creates or conveys this tuma. It's not true of a shomer, something that's protected of it. And therefore, if you have less than a kezayit of nevela and a skin or a hide on it, even though for tumat ochlim, that would be added together for the minimum shior, by nevela it's not added to the shior, and therefore you don't have a kezayit of Nevela, and it won't convey Tuma, because the skin is viewed there as a Shomer, and in that context, or in that capacity, it doesn't have a din of helping out the Nevela. On the other hand, if you have a Kezayit Basar on the other side of the hide, and they don't touch that Nevela, but you touch the hide, you will become Tameh. And that's because there, the skin is not acting or functioning as a Shomer, it's functioning as a Yad. It's a mechanism for picking up that Basar Nevela. It's like a handle to handle the Basar itself, the Basar Nevela. And what it's saying over here, and that's what Rav is explaining in this Braita, is that Nevela is not subject to the din of Shomer, but it is subject to the din of Yad. And therefore, conveyance of Tumah through that Yad can't happen if you pick it up that way, if you come into contact with it that way. But it can't function to extend or expand the shiur of that item because of the miut of Nivlata. Only Nevela conveys Tumah, not the Shomrim that are wrapped around it. They don't add to the minimum shiur. But it does act as a Yad, which is that it is a mechanism for picking it up. And a Yad can extend Tumah through it, meaning Tumah can be passed through a Yad, even though you're not in direct contact with the Nevela itself. That does happen by Nevela, and that's what the word Yitma, which is a Riboy, comes to teach you. So the Nivlata is a Miyot, tell you that there's no din of Shomer. Yitma is a Riboy that tells you there is a din of Yad. Okay, we're going to stop here. 8 lines down on the top of Kuf Yudchet, Amud Aleph.